معرفة الكنسر بين السلم مان and the family memory of Scott and Mazatov شيء يوصى بستناي الشهور قبل الكنسر في دلوقتي مش مكان The topic of defense of the Ashkenazim and Sephardim is something as to the history. And through the years, we had so many machloket arguments between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, and unfortunately, it got to the point of Sinat Chinam, of really hatred between them. And it became so serious that, again, unfortunately, people are looking at each other in a different way. And also became to a point that some people don't marry from the other one. Certain places, Ashkenazim don't marry Sephardim, Sephardim don't marry Ashkenazim. The question is, how did that all start? We were all under the same umbrella. We had the Torah, for the Torah who gave one Torah to everybody, and we had the same customs, and we had the same halachos, we had the same Rambam, we had the same Shulchan Aruch, and we followed the same halacha. How could this be that that through the years, get arguments, and the machloket, all this separation started? And even got to a point at one time that people, Sephardim said Moshe Rabbeinu was Sephardi, and they said that Avraham Avinu was Ashkenazi, and they got through unbelievable things, ridiculous things, that unfortunately they were serious. Some of them were serious. Now, what I want to talk tonight, that I want to speak about where the differences started, what are the differences, and the importance of the customs that are established today, and we need to keep and follow the customs that we have today. After the Churban Beit HaMikdash, after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, until the Churban Beit HaMikdash, until the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, everybody followed the same thing. There was no different customs. Everybody was living in Eretz Israel, and some Jews, they were living different parts. Some Jews, they were at north of Eretz Israel, and some Jews, they were living south of Eretz Israel. But mainly, Jews were living in Eretz Israel, inside Eretz Israel. After the Qurban, when the destruction of the Hamikdash happened, the Jews left. Some Jews, they went to north of Eretz Israel, some Jews went to west of Eretz Israel. And that, the ones that they stayed in Eretz Israel, or they went to the north, they became Ashkenazim, and the ones that they went to the west, they were totally out, and went to the Mediterranean regime, that they became the Sephardim that we have today. The historians, they all agree that the reason there are differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, mainly, one of the main reason is the influences that they had by the non-Jews. That's one of the main and most important differences that there exist. There's a Sefer Tzedar LeDerech that it says that it is well known that the appearance of people in Germany is different than the appearance of the Jews that they live in Spain. Even they don't look at us. If you look at the Jews and that live in Germany, and you look at the Jews that they live in Spain, are different. They don't even look like each other. And it says that when you wanted to know if someone is Ashkenazi or Sephardi, by just looking at them, you would know. That's what Sefer Tzedar LeDerech writes in 1600. The question is now, the Ashkenazi, what we call Ashkenazi, and Ashkenazi means those that they live in Germany and France. When we say Sephardi, means the Jews that they live in Spain. That's really what the Jews were. Germany and France, and it said, that's it. That was all thing. And now, there are, in order to understand it very clearly, there are four different times that the division started. There was from the time, really, that the whole thing started from the time of the Geonim. Geonim, they lived right after Chorban Beit HaMikdash in Babel. That was the concentrated Jews. Most of the Jews lived in Baghdad in Babel. And that, Geonim also were there. From the time of the Geonim until the death of Rabban, Maimonides, which is 1200, 1204, Rabban passed away. In that period, Sephardim were the most stronger Jews. They were the court of Donetsk, and the Ashkenazim were the recipients. At that time, the Sephardim produced most of the Torah that exists today, which the Torah that we have, Rif, Rambam, Machzor in 3, most of the base of the Halakha that exists today, and we as Jews follow them, produced at that time, because the Jews, they lived in Babel, and Babel was Pompadita, the yeshiva, the biggest yeshivot in the world, existed in the city of Babel. Then, from the time that Rambam passed away, until the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, that he was living in Germany at that time, then he moved and traveled to Spain, that it is the year 1304. That time, the influences of Ashkenazi and Sephardi were mutual. None of them were higher or lower or bigger or smaller, they were mutual. Then we have from the time of Rosh, which he arrived in Spain, until the year 1391, right? At that time, Ashkenazim, they became stronger, they became the donors, and the Sephardim became the recipients. Why is that? This is a big, very important nekudah to remember, because we need this from through the whole lecture. The main person that caused the division, not this disorder is fault, the main person that really brought the division between Ashkenazim and Sephardim and notified the division was Rosh. Rosh was an Ashkenazi Posek, was as big as a Rambam, he lived in Germany. He moved to Spain because of the pogrom and things that was going on in Germany, he had to get out. He moved to Spain and he started teaching the Jews in Spain. The Jews in Spain at that time done nothing. Because all the Torah, all the Rashi Yeshivot, all the Gedolim, all the sages, they lived in Babel. The Jews had to leave. They left Babel, they went to Spain. When they moved to Spain, the Chachamim, they didn't go with them. Therefore, Rosh went from Germany and went to Spain. When he got to Spain, the Jews, they welcomed him, and they hugged him, they thanked him, they said, we need you here, please stay with us. He stayed there, he started the yeshiva. He started the yeshiva in Germany, in Spain, and he became Rav and the Rosh Yeshiva of Spain. And Rosh, because when he was living in Germany, he had all these customs that he had in his head, he brought it to Spain and introduced them to Sephardim that they were living in Spain. And this is the reason that, by the way, that the Moroccans that are originated from Spain, they have mostly their custom is from Ashkenazim. Because Ashkenazim, the Spain is the mekor, the yesod, the foundation of the Minhagim, and the Minhagim that they really established in Spain was from Rosh. From the time that Rosh passed away, and the pogroms in Germany and Spain started, which is the year 1391 to 1492, right? There was no contact between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. They really stayed, everybody went on their ways. And from the time of Urban Sepharad, which around 1492, and since the writing of Rema, למד את רבי משה ישראליש בתשירו בהגעות השולחן ערור שפעם דעת כאן תהיה 15-17, 15-17 that time everybody tried to be Sephardic and Ashkenazim together from 1492 to 1571 they tried to put them together then from the time that the Rema this is also important to remember from the time that the Rema wrote the Agaot and Sultan Aruch legally Sephardic and Ashkenazim until the time of Rema the Sephardim and Ashkenazim, everybody was working with each other. They tried to put them together, but once Rema wrote the Agaot and Sultan Aruch, they legally, the Sephardim went their way, and Ashkenazim went on their way. That's the most different period that really could look at it and Sephardim as the story of the Sephardim and Ashkenazim. Now there was somebody else that had a very big impact on creating Ashkenazi customs, and that is Rabbeinu Gershom. The Ashkenazi started the year 800 in the city of Germany, which is before the Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz, the son of Gemara Masechet Megillah said, Ashkenaz is German. And the Mekor, the foundation of Ashkenazim, started in the city of the country of Ashkenaz in Germany. And the first family that started the Minhagi Ashkenazim was a family of Kolonimos. This family of Kolonimos, they were the first family that they started to introduce the Minhagi Ashkenaz. At that time, there was only 100,000 Ashkenazim and 1.5 million Sephardim at that time. The year 1900, there was over 10,000 Ashkenazim in the world. Everything changed. In the beginning, the Ashkenazim was only 100,000, 10,000 Ashkenazim. At the time of the beginning, 800, there was only 10,000 Ashkenazim and 1.5 million Sephardim. By the year 1900, there was 10 million Ashkenazim in the world. In other words, everything changed. The beginning was a different ballgame. The end, everything changed into a different direction. Now, the Ashkenazi community in the 10th and 11th century was very small in size. And they had a lot of power and influence in their country, in their society, and in the Jewish world. There was one person, Rabbeinu Gershom, in Ora Gola. He called him Rabbeinu Gershom Ora Gola, which was the light of exile. Rabbeinu Gershom came around the 8000 and introduced a lot of Cherem, a lot of Cherem, a lot of Takonot. And he went out of his way to ban if somebody did not listen to the Takonot and things that he said, they put him in, they excommunicated him and they put him out of the community. The interesting thing is that the only people that they listened to this Takonot Rabbeinu Gershom was only Ashkenazi. Sephardim had nothing to do with it. Sephardim, they stayed out of all these Takonot until today. All these Takonot that Rabbeinu Gershom made, Sephardim stayed out of. What are the Takonot? The Takonot, the decrees that he made was so important, decrees that had so much impact in the Ashkenazi world that Sephardim stayed out of it. And really, that is the main, one of the main things that separated Ashkenazim and Sephardim from each other. Namely, Rabbeinu Gershom made the Takonah that a man is not allowed to marry two wives. And Sephardim did not accept that. I don't have to tell you, in all the cities, in Morocco, in Iran, in other places, Sephardim had more than one wife. That's not a secret. The answer. Questions later. Before I said that, I know that I'm going to have a question about that. That's what I'm going to ask. Questions later. There was also Rabbeinu Gershom also made a takana that a get ba'al korcha, if a woman is not interested to accept a get, you are not allowed to force her or give her against her will. But then we have some made that Tana also, which until today is that accepted by Ashkenazim, Sephardim did not accept that. Now the question is, why the Rabbeinu Gershom came with this idea? And there's only two, there are a lot of other ones that I'm not mentioning. These are the two main ones that really separated Ashkenazim and Sephardim from each other. Rabbeinu Gershom lived in Germany. He lived in a city, in the country, that Christianity was very strong. The Christians at that time, they had hung up on marriage and sex and women. But the big thing was, and for them to see that a man had two wives was out of question. Rabbeinu Gershom said, if the going in that society are so strong about this, if the Jews are not going to be strong on that, it's going to look alike that the Jews don't care. That the Torah of the Jews is pointless. Therefore, Rabbeinu Gershom made a cheren that the Jews also have to go to the society according to the world, the country that they live, that they cannot marry to them. Now, why not Sephardim? Sephardim, they live under the influence of Arabs. The Arabs, they married for a while. They didn't care anyway. The whole thing did not apply to them. And therefore, they adopted the idea of the society and the country that they live. And therefore, they didn't need to make that account. Because according to Halakha, there's no question. According to Halakha, you are man that are allowed more than boy, wife. And the better person just made the Tatana made it easy. Until the establishment of the State of Israel, which everybody agreed that nobody should actually marry more than one wife. That besides, we, that the Jews, anybody lives in any other country, like we live in America, there's a law of the country that you are not allowed to marry more than one wife, and everybody has to obey the law of the country, and therefore it is absurd. No question, even for Sephardim, that they live outside Eretz Israel, live in America, you still have to obey the law, and you are not allowed to marry one wife. More than one wife. And they again. What does that take? We also have, there was another halakha, another hatana, another decree that Rabbeinu Gershom made. The hatana was that if somebody, a Jew, is converted to Christianity and he wants to come back, that you are allowed to accept him back without any restrictions. Rabbeinu Gershom made that takana. If Sephardim did not accept that deal. But if a Jew is converted to Christianity, he wants to come back, he has to go to the mitzvah, they have to shave his head. The Sephardim, they were strong on that. The Ashkenazim, they were lenient on this takana. Why? Because, again, Ashkenazim, they lived in a country with a lot of pogroms. They knew that they were going to lose Jews. They knew that Jews are going to leave. And therefore, they made it easier for them to come back to Judaism. If they choose to come back, they shouldn't put so much burden on them that they should decide they don't want to come back. Therefore, by Ashkenazim, it was much easier for them to come back, which by Sephardim wasn't. Because again, the influence of Arab, nobody became Muslim. It was unheard of. For a Jew to become a Muslim was almost impossible. For a Jew to become a Christian was very common. And therefore, Rabbeinu Gershom made it easier for them to come back. And therefore, Rabbeinu Gershom was another person, another one, that really made the differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim very clear and very broad. There are other differences which is very noticeable between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. You have to understand one thing, that altogether Sephardim, they were more lenient than Ashkenazim. That's the known fact. If you open the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, you see در مران سلطان روح is much more lenient than Ashkenaz. But there is another thing that if you see the whole Al-Bakr Shulchan Aruch, you read from the beginning of Shulchan Aruch to the end of Shulchan Aruch, Rama, the only thing Rama writes, the Chen Noagim. This is our custom. Rama does not come and introduce a different halakha. Rama agrees with what Shulchan Aruch says. But what he says, that our custom is like that. Therefore, Shulchan Aruch is more lenient and Rama is more stringent. Therefore, Sephardim are more lenient and Ashkenazim are more machmir. The difference really starts like this. One example would be the love of superstitions. Ashkenazim, I know it sounds very non-normal, but that's the reality. Ashkenazim, they cared about superstitions much more than Sephardim. At the beginning, Ashkenazim, anything they wanted to do was superstitious. And now today is different. Today, Sephardim are that way. But in the beginning, Ashkenazim were that way. And therefore, Ashkenazim did not name a child after somebody was alive. Because they said, oh, wait a minute, somebody is alive, Ainara, we don't want to do that. Therefore, they start naming children after somebody is dead. That was because of Ainara, and they started. The real Sephardim, they do that. Sephardim, they name after a child after somebody is alive, because they didn't care about superstitions. They also, the love of marriage. There was another halakha that, again, Sephardim are more lenient than Ashkenazim. They have a love, Ibum the Chalitza. If somebody has a wife, there are no children, the husband died. The Torah tells us that you have a choice. Either the wife marries the brother-in-law, the husband's brother, or the brother asks us to a chalitza. The meaning by Ashkenazim is they never do ibum. They never today, they never marry the brother either. They only do chalitza. And by Sephardim, it's not like that. Sephardim, Rav Ovadia says that the meaning of Sephardim, generation after generation, was that the Sephardim married. They made ibum and they married the brother. That was another thing that Ashkenazim, they didn't do that, and that was also due to the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom. That's also another one that Rabbeinu Gershom made. They also, Sephardim, they were under influence of Keraim, Karaites. And therefore, a lot of halakhot that Sephardim had, the stringent that the Sephardim had, was because they dealt with Keraim much more direct than Ashkenazim. I'll give you one example. On Erev Shabbat, Sephardim are very, until today, they are very big on getting married on Erev Shabbat. On Fridays, in Erev Israel today, Sephardim, the whole country was like that too, Sephardim married on Friday. Nobody understood why Friday. Rama writes, Shelot Shvot Rama, that Ashkenazim, they never had a custom to marry on Friday. But that's why they went out of their way not to marry on Friday. Where did the custom come from? Sephardim, they were in direct contact with Karaim. Karaites, they are so much against marrying on Friday. They went out of their way, they banned people not to marry on Friday. Therefore, Sephardim, because they wanted Kufaqah to go against them, they started marrying on Friday to show them that the crime are wrong. They went out of their way and they wanted to show the world that the crime are not the ones that should take them seriously, and therefore they married on Friday. Ashkenazim, they said, why? They had no contact with crime. Therefore, they didn't marry on Friday because of Chilul Shabbat. There was so much problems involved with getting married on Friday, they didn't have to please anybody. They stayed out of it. The love of Avelut, mourning, the Ashkenazim, also they had there were so many differences that Ashkenazim had on Sephardim more. The reason is that again, it's another thing which it doesn't make sense today, but it was there before. The Ashkenazim were involved with Kabbalah more than the Sephardim in the beginning. And therefore, a lot of Kabbalah, of Avelut, of mourning period, it was based on Kabbalah, Ashkenazim introduced it to the world. Then later on, Sephardim accepted it also. The influence of Kabbalah was more on Ashkenazim in the beginning, in Germany, and then was transferred to Sephardim in Spain and then Morocco and Babel and other places. But originally, the idea of Kabbalah did not start by Sephardim, it started by Ashkenazim, and therefore the idea of a lot of things that we do today is not that we are the ones that produce it. It's not that the Sephardim produce it. The idea was produced by Ashkenazim and later on was transferred to Sephardim. There is one thing that I need to clarify. There are Sephardim over time adopted a lot of halakhot from Ashkenazim, which mainly, listen to all that, Tashlich. Tashlich is not a Sephardi custom. We never did Tashlich before. And until today, the Yemenites, they don't do Tashlich, because that's not part of the Sephardi custom. We adopted it from Ashkenazim. Ta'anit Bechorot, the first four that you have to fast on the Erev Pesach, the day before Pesach, that's not the Sephardi custom. Was adopted by Ashkenazim. We never had this custom before. But Erev Rosh Hashanah, Arav Ben Ishchai writes that the person should try to fast. That was also adopted by Ashkenazim. Sephardim never had that before either. There is that custom that you break a glass on Chatunah. That's also Ashkenazi custom. Sephardim never had that custom either. Right? To say Kaddish for 11 months, Sephardim never had that. By the way, saying Kaddish doesn't mention anywhere. There's only one Midrash about Rabbi Akiva that the Midrash says. But where was the Midrash? It's not in Gemara. And all idea of Kaddish is not even mentioned anywhere. That was Ashkenazi custom. The Sephardi never had a minhag, say Kaddish. The whole 11 months saying Kaddish is all Ashkenazi custom. To observe the Yortzeit was Ashkenazi custom. We have never had that custom either. You put a 50-year-old the Sephardi, what did they do? if everything was bad from Ashkenazi, the Sephardi didn't do anything. They just ate and slept and then bought it. They didn't do anything. And a lot of customs that we have today is from Rabbi Yehuda Hasid. Rabbi Yehuda Hasid was Ashkenazi also. You are not allowed to marry two sisters and marry somebody's son-in-law that has the same name as the father-in-law. We cannot. That's Rabbi Yehuda Hasid. All that again is based on Ashkenazi. We never had that. All of the Takonot Rabbeinu Gershon was Ashkenazi. Really, the Sephardim, they had very clear system. Their system was basically, they were involved in philosophy, and their learning Gemara was very different than Ashkenazi. That's where the main differences came about. Sephardim, if you see in Rashi says, Achi Garcina. Sephardim never had that. Sephardim, they had a clear cut Gemara, they learned the Gemara, this is the Hanukkah, they went on with their life. Ashkenazim, they never had that. Ashkenazim, that different notes of the Gemara, And therefore, when Rashi and Tosfot came and they wrote the Pirush and the Gemara, they didn't have the clear cut Gemara. And they had to research and research and research. Through the research that they did, a lot of customs came about. And that's why the differences, the customs that was created was because they were living. Number one, the influence of Goyim, influence of Bota Olam, and also the economic situation that the people lived in made the differences very strong. The Limud HaGemara, the learning of the Gemara that the Sephardim had was a clear cut learning Gemara, and they were involved with philosophy and not no Kabbalah, no Rabbeinu Gershom, no Rabbi Yehuda Hasid, was pure learning Gemara, and that was the main thing that they made the Moran Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch here is clear cut Gemara. There was one thing that Ashkenazi Sephardim were more machmir than Sephardim, than Ashkenazi. And that was the halachot of Terefot. Halachot of Terefot, Sephardim, they were more extreme than the Ashkenazis.
Right,
to make something kosher or shrimp. That, why was that? Because not everything. Basically, the Sephardim, they were more lenient on most of the halachot except the halachot prayer. Most of the halachot of Terefot, Sephardim, they were much more lenient than Ashkenazim. Sorry, maybe that was. The reason was that, again, to go back to the same idea, why? Because when you read the Gemara, the halachot of Terefot is very lenient. It's not the way we have it today. For instance, in America, if you shech the cow, you cannot use the chelek achrei. The back part of the cow you cannot use. In Europe, they allow us to tell you don't use it either. Like the Sephardim, they used everything. Everything was clear. Why was it like that? Because Ashkenazim, they had a better economic situation. They could have afforded to be machmir. They could have afforded to be more strict. And there was even a small thing that they had to stop it, they throw it out. They said it's better for us not to deal with it. And that suffix became a law, became a custom. Any doubt that they had eventually became a custom. Like Sephardim, he lived in Arab country. I'm sure a lot of you know, Arabs don't eat anything that the Jew touched. If a Jew shed the cup, the Arab wouldn't use it. And therefore, was a chesed merubah, was a monetary loss for a Jew to share and have to throw it away. Like Christians was not like that. Like Christians, when if somebody shared, it's not good for you, it's telling to a Christian, they would die from it. Like Arabs, not like they have to throw it away, therefore you were dealing with a monetary loss. And that is the Sephardim, they had to find a way to make that thing that they had, the cow that they shared, they had to find a way to make it mutar, to make it permissible. Therefore, what did they do? They went basically according to the rule of the law. They opened the Gemara, they learned the Gemara, they had the halakha, and they followed the halakha 100%. That's why the Terefot, the halakhot of Terefot, is a very big difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. And it was a time that Ashkenazim did not eat by Sephardim. There was a time like that, because they said it's Kelim, the pots and pans of Sephardim are true. Because the love of Terefot was so different, was unbelievably different, that the Ashkenazim didn't eat there. They said your pots and pans are true. Until the establishment again has said that around 1940s, that the Sephardim also they accepted the love of Ashkenazim, they became strict. And the love of Terefot, that's why everybody's together now. But until then, anybody that lived in Baghdad or in Morocco or in Iran, the Ashkenazim would come to your house, wouldn't be able to eat, because we were so meker. We were so lenient on the halachot of Terefot and Sephardim. And the same halachot would apply also regarding halachot of kashrut. Halachot of basar v'chalav, the ta'arobet, the mixing of meat and milk, also separatim are much more lenient than Ashkenazim. For the same reason that anything that has to do with food, and it was a monetary loss, as separatim had to be lenient, because otherwise you would throw everything away every day. There was a halakha that Shulchan Aruch, again, is very, very naked, and Lemar says, Anachnu Noagim, we have a custom to be mafus, be strict. And that is, if you have a meat and meat mixed up, the Marach Shulchan Aruch says, you get a call to taste it. If it tastes like a meal, throw it away. If it doesn't taste, then use it. Ramah says, you cannot come at home, so they don't play games like that. And that was a deep leniency. And Sephardim, they followed that for years. And Ashkenazim, they never followed that. And there was a story in Eretz Yisrael once that they had something like that, and they wanted to get a Sephardi to give it to a boy to say, anyway, they stopped that, and therefore from then on, all the halakhot of Asava Chalav, Terechot, Ta'arovet, Kashrut, everything that they have, Sephardim basically today, this man has said, we follow the Ashkenazi custom because we don't want to be separation. Yet there's one thing I have to know, the one thing that the establishment of Eretz Israel did that was good, try to put the Sephardim and Ashkenazim closer to each other. The Rabbanut that they made in Eretz Israel, the Rabbanut Arashki that was in Eretz Israel, they did what one good thing that they tried to do that was very beneficial for everybody was that they tried to bring everybody closer to each other, and they tried to put the halakhot, the custom, that everybody should be closer to each other. There is another custom that the Sephardim and Ashkenazim are backwards, and that is regarding the Nerot Hanukkah, lighting of the Hanukkah candles. The Sephardim, they adopted the Ashkenazi posse, and the Ashkenazim, they adopted the Sephardi posse. And that nobody understood what the reason is. Sephardim, they followed the Tosfot, which was supposed to be the Ashkenazi, and Ashkenazim, they followed the Rambam, which was the Sephardi. For years it was like that. What's the reason behind that? Again, there's, for each one, there is a beautiful reason. There's a Sefer Kitab HaKabbalah. He writes like this. He says the reason was like this. Originally, the light, the Hanukkah candles, should have been lit outside your house. That's the way it's supposed to be. The Ashkenazim, they always at the custom to light it inside, because they were under prosecution. They couldn't light their candles outside. Sephardim, they did. They lit outside, and it was beautiful. Nobody bothered them. Therefore, the Sephardim, when they light one candle, they had to go according to halakha, you light one for their family. If they would light according to every member of the family outside, when people were looking at it, they wouldn't know what day is it. Everyone would get confused, right? Because the Sephardim, they lit outside. The Ashkenazim, that they never lit outside, they always lit inside. They went according to Rambam, which Rambam said that every family member should light for themselves. And therefore inside, there's no confusion. It's only family members out there. And that's why each one adopted based on the influences of the society. They accepted the custom of that society, and Ashkenazim went to the Sephardim, and Sephardim went according to Ashkenazim. And that's where the Chilukim came about. There is another halakha that the Sephardim are much more lenient than Ashkenazim, and that's the love of 9 days. The 9 days, the Ashkenazim are very, very strict. You don't want to be Ashkenazi during 9 days. And the Sephardim are very lenient. And another halakha that the Sephardim are very lenient, Pesach time. Pesach, Hati Shabbat, you want to be Sephardim, the rest are very Ashkenazi. What is the reason for these two? During Pesach, during 9 days, the Ashkenazim are very strict there is an unbelievable reason for that, which makes a lot of sense. Ashkenazim, they were living in a society again that was a lot of Christian influence was on them. They were living in a time that Mashiach, coming of Mashiach, was very foreigner. Nobody cared about Mashiach. They had the economy, economically they were very successful. They had money, they had fame, they had beautiful things going for them. And therefore the idea of Mashiach was not in their calendar. The Gedolim, they came, the Geonet and Ashkenaz, because they wanted to emphasize of Mashiach and Urban Mechalitash and the destruction of the Mechalitash, they made the laws of Urban Mechalitash very strong. They made it very strict. During the 9 days, they put emphasis of everything that they do, that they should know that you are living in Galut. They should know that you are under persecution. They should know that Mashiach is not here yet. And they should know that the Mechalitash is not revealed. And they should know Mashiach is going to come. And therefore they made as many as laws for Ashkenazim to remember that all the time. Sephardim, they didn't have problem with that. Sephardim, they always knew that they are in Galut. They were physically, they know that. They know that they are in Galut. They're living under the persecution of the Arabs and never had a problem of knowing that Mashiach has to come. And therefore they went again according to their law. Of the halakha, if you look at Gemara, you open the Gemara, Masechet Ta'anit, the Gemara says clearly, these are the rules that the Sephardim do. Ashkenazim, they went and became after the halakha. The same halakha applies to Pesach. Pesach, Ashkenazim, don't eat kitmiyot. The Sephardim eat anything, basically, anything, only bread they don't eat. That's the one, then I think if they could have find the heaven to eat bread, they would do that too. But basically they eat everything except bread. Why is it like that? Because, again, the Ashkenazim, they lived in a society that the economy was very good for them. That anything they wanted, they put up a form to show, to be machne, because they had to show the people that if you are going to be naked, you are going to not be free, eventually you might come eat bread. The Baradim, they were strong without that. They had the limud, they had the learning, they were strong. They didn't need anybody to teach them that. Therefore, they went according to the rule of the law. The only thing is asur, bread. That's all the Gemara said, that's all the Torah said, and they did it. They did what the Tanakh said. The Ashkenazim, they needed to mechazet, they needed to get the people stronger and to strengthen their community, and that's why they did what they did. You see, I'm talking about a few things here, and that you see the basically the idea of the influences of the Sephardim, that they were under the cry, and Ashkenazim, they were under the influences of German and Christianity, and how much they had influence on them to be like Goim, and therefore they went further and further and further to be like to keep their custom and Allah. There's two areas that the Faradim are more strict, and that's the Alka Pasaku. If you have a bread that was baked by a non-Jew, all the ingredients are kosher. Maran says another bread, that you have to be naked. Ramah says there that Anun Ma'agim La'akim, you are naked, even though he said that there is a Jewish baker in the city. You don't have to worry about that. Eat the chataku. Maran says that you have to be naked. Why? Because by the Sephardim, they lived in the country that closeness was an issue, and they were, their business didn't do that. And the bread was the main thing that they had to eat. Therefore, Shulchan Aruch says that you have to stay away from the contact that you had with that. The same thing Shulchan Aruch says, that if you want to go to a bar to have a beer, Shulchan Aruch says you cannot do that, and Ramah says you are allowed to do that. That's also because of the influences
that the Arabs as a Sephardim, that the Ashkenazim did not have to worry about it. Now, I want to talk about now for a few minutes the importance of Minhagim. Until now, I said the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, where the differences come from, why Ashkenazim, Ashkenazim are more straight or nicer. At the end of the day, bottom line, everybody needs to keep them. You can't get out of here tonight and say, oh, Sephardim are more lenient, I'm going to become Sephardim. There's a mikveh back here, I'm going to go in and get out, I'm going to become Sephardim, or vice versa. Doesn't work that way. You can't change your customs. If a person was born to a parent that they were Sephardim or Ashkenazi, you have to keep your customs. You can't change under any circumstances, and it's very, very important to hold on to the custom. And from the time of the Ramah until today, the Gedolim, they went out of their way to answer every custom. They wanted to make sure that the custom never was changed. And even the customs that didn't make sense, the customs were established that they didn't even know what to do with it. They wanted to make sure that the customs were kept. Now, why we need customs? Why can't we just go according to halakha? There is a halakha, you open Shulchan Aruch, it says to do this, don't do that, go on with Shulchan Aruch, that's it, it's finished. Why do I need a custom for? Where the minhag come from? Minhag was established because of two reasons. One is, there was a machloket in halakha. The chachamim, the great sages of that generation, they decided that they need to follow this halakha. And therefore they followed the halakha of certain posek. And that became a custom. Or, there was another reason that the minhag was established. The chachamim of the generation, they saw that it is important in order to keep Judaism going, they have to come out with a custom to make sure that Judaism is going to flourish and is going to continue. And therefore, if we, going to decide now, oh, that was 200 years ago, they needed that, they had to worry about that, now we're living in a situation in society, we don't need to worry about this, we don't need to worry about that, we cannot do that. I want to give a quick example. There was a city in Europe, and Antti Shabbat out, they took the Sefer Torah out, and they didn't put it on the bima. They had a guy that bent it down like that, and they put the Sefer Torah on his back, and they rest on that Sefer Torah. That was a custom in the city. Somebody wrote a she'era to Rabbi Shimon Abuab. And he said, this is the custom they do here. Is there any point in Bizayun? Is there how much? Is a Zirzum? Disrespect to Sefer Torah. They put a guy down like this, I'll put the Sefer Torah in memory. Why can't you just bring on the Bima? And the question was, should we keep on doing this halakh, this minhag, or should we stop it? Listen to what he said. He said, based on everything that they wrote in the letter, this custom doesn't make sense. And based on everything that they wrote in the letter, you should cancel this custom. But he says, I am not going to tell you who. If that custom was established, there must be a reason that the Chachamim, the sages of that generation, they decided and you have to keep on doing it. Until you find that how, why they did it and all who did it. That takes us to another reason that the customs are important. There are certain customs that you have to know who established the custom. The custom, if it is not established by Chachamim of the generation, the custom is not a valid custom. Minhag, it could be a word of Gehinam also. Right? Minhagim could be Gehinam. Sometimes the minhag is worthless. Sometimes the minhag was established by somebody that no idea why they're doing it. But if the minhag is been going on for generations after generations, and they've been doing it, there is nobody has a right to come and destroy the custom. I give you the Maaseh Shayar in Vilna. I go on the Vilna. Nobody bigger than Agaon Mevilna. Agaon Mevilna was the new Kola Kola Kola. He said, he read the Halakot, Shulchan Aruch, the wrong reason that the Shulchan Aruch is Siyat Kapan. Why the Kohanim go to Dukhan? According to Halakha, the Kohanim, they should go to Dukhan, even if they're living in Kuslars. Ashkenazim, they have a person, that only on Yom Tov they go to Dukhan. The Agaon Mevilna said, there is no reason there. Let's establish a custom that the Ashkenazim also should go out to Dukhan. He put a flyer all over town. Tomorrow morning, there's going to be a Nesiyat Kapayim in the Shula Villa. Everybody should come to the synagogue. The Kohanim going to go out to Dukhan. In the morning, when they start coming to the shul burned down. There was a fire in the shul, destroyed. Fine. Later on, again a Gaon Mevilna came with that. They said, we need to establish this custom. I don't understand why this custom shouldn't be applied to Chutzlar. They again established it with a flyer that there's going to be a Dukhan. The second attack was taken to jail. And he said, that's a Siman in a Shamayim. Even though that two things make sense, that the custom should be changed, we are not the one to change the custom. It doesn't matter why and how and who, as long as the custom was established by Chachamim, by Gedolim, by sages, nobody has the right to destroy that custom. At the same time, if somebody comes up and says, I have a custom to drive on Shabbat, that is not a custom. If somebody comes up here and says, I have a custom to eat cheeseburger, that's not a custom. You have to have a custom that has been established by the Gedolim. You have to have a source in Halakha. If the test that the Minhag has no source in the Halakha, you cannot establish that custom. How do we know that? How do we know that the custom was established by Chachamim or by some Joe Below guy? The way to know it is like this. If the custom is going on for generations after generation, that is the reason to believe that the custom was established by Chacham. Because otherwise it would not go on for so long. Would stop somewhere. If this is going on for so many years, then we have to assume that the custom was established by Gedolim. I'll give you a second example. There was the Shlomo Kluger, the Chassan Levachat, the Shailot Shok, Tov Tam Vadaat. There's a beautiful Shailah in that says like this. That there was a custom in the city that of Shlomo Kluger was the Rav, that the Chalot, that the girls that they got married, during the week, they lit candles and they made barakah. They made la'azir, Nesher Shabbat, on Tuesday. Middle of the week, they made Shabbat candles and they made barakah. They wrote the she'ela to the Shlomo Kluger. They said, this is the custom we have in this city. Should we hold on to it, or should we destroy it? He said, how long this custom has been going around? So for years and years and years, this custom is going down. But therefore, it must be that was established for a reason, established by Chachamim. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch, that's why we need Chachamim, and that's why we need the Torah, and that's why we need Gedolei Hador to tell us when to cancel a custom and when to keep on and hold on to the custom. He says that this. He said, it must be, he said, I can't figure it out. Why on Tuesday morning? Somebody would light a candle, I would make that this is a Shabbat. Doesn't make sense. Nobody, it's impossible to find the pharaohs, find an answer why they did it. But there is the answer. He says that probably what happened was like this. The Arab somebody wanted to get married. The Kallah wanted to get married. They brought him in, they taught him the alakha, how to light candles and how to make sarakha. And the alakha is Shulchanaro says, when you are teaching somebody to make a barakha, you are allowed to pronounce Hashem's name. And therefore they brought the Kallah, they studied and said, say, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Ve'Shalom Tzor Atid Ve'Shem Shabbat. And the girl, Kallah, made the barakha and they did the candle. They taught them how to do it. And therefore it became a custom for generations later that anybody becomes the Kallah, they make it, they light candles on the day during the week and they make the Atid Ve'Shem Shabbat. That's where the custom comes from. And therefore it says, continue doing it. If that minhag is established in the city, that shows that it was established by the chachamim of the generation. You cannot come around and destroy it. There was a story in the city once that a rab wanted to become a rab in that city. Walked into the shul, the first Shabbat, said that when the Chazan gets to end of Shema Yisrael, he said, Hashem Elokechem Emet, and somebody starts screaming from the end, and he said, don't say Emet, say Emet Yatzir. This rabbi went to the Zaken, he went to the elder of that synagogue. He said, what is the custom of this shul? Why there is a machluk? Why there is a fight? He says, Hashem Elokechem Emet, the guy screams, you say Emet Yatzir. Just figure out what the custom is and do it. He said, the custom is a scream. So that's what the custom of the system, the congregation, the rate, the road was like that. The guy said, Hashem Yachem Med, the other guy screamed and said, that was the custom. You can't fix the custom. That's the way it was. And this, that type of custom is not a custom. That's the nonsense. Somebody came out, that's what I said at the beginning. Somebody comes and they say the custom is to scream, custom is to do this, custom to do that, that's nothing. That's not a proper custom. There is a known story about Shahagat Aliyah. The Shahagat Aliyah, when he wanted to become the rab in the city, somebody went up to him and said, you are becoming the new rab of our city. We have a custom in this city that any rab that comes into the city, write this custom. Please write down what your customs are that you want us at the Kehillah to follow your customs. So the Shagat Aliyah writes like this, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha Hashem Elokecha Meretz Yisrael Zay Lo Tirzah Lo Tirav Lo Tignov. These are my customs. The customs that Feret HaDiberot. These are the customs that you, the people, they care about the customs more than the Halakha. And therefore, the Shagat Aliyah said, don't worry about the word of custom. Care about the law. You do the halachot, and if a person cares about the halachot enough, they're eventually going to come to care about the customs also. The Arab Bakshi Doron, in a Sefer Binyan Av, he said a beautiful idea why the customs are important. He said, when you have alakha, when you do alakha, the neshama of the alakha is the minhag. That is here, the mashal. He said, the alakha is that you have to have honored Shabbat. You have to have pleasure on Shabbat. But we don't know how are we supposed to have pleasure on Shabbat. Right? Then we need the alakha is honored Shabbat. What is the custom? The custom that is going to contribute to this halakha, it makes the halakha alive. Without the custom, we don't know what to do. Now, everybody has a different way how to have a pleasure on Shabbat. Some people sleep, some people they drink, some people they walk, some people they have meat, some people they can't have meat, some people they have hot food, some people don't have hot food. Everybody has a different way. And that's why we need the custom to know how to do the halakha. Without the custom, we cannot do the proper halakha. That's why the Gemara says, a few different Gemara. The Gemara says, the Sechet Sofrim, that in halakha nikba'at at sheyeh minhag. You cannot obey halakha, you cannot establish halakha until you have a custom. Without that, you cannot have halakha. Then Shelot Shon Ma'ariv Runa said, minhag oker halakha. If you have a minhag, the minhag destroys the halakha, throws the halakha out of the window. A minhag, the custom, has overrides the halakha. These are the important, they are the yesod, they are the foundation of Am Yisrael. And I understand that the minhagim, you could say to yourself, the Jews live in Germany and France, and the Jews live in Spain, the Jews live in Babel, they have so many customs they came about, it doesn't apply today. The reason behind it doesn't apply. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with it. They were established, and we have to follow the custom, even though that the reason behind the custom does not apply to them. It was established by Gedolim, and they knew exactly that they had to leave the Salakha, and they had to make the Salakha actively until today. I want to tell a story which is going to put a light where Rema comes from, that he put all the halakhot, it says Achino Agin. This is the way we have in the custom. You look at the Rema from the beginning of Orach Chaim and till the end of Koshen Mishpat, this is the way it goes. Anono Agin, Achino Agin, Minhag HaMakom, everything is minhag. And he says, and he writes all the time, En Lazuz Min HaMinhag, don't separate yourself from the custom. There was a story that happened to Rama himself that he came out with this custom, with this halakha. When Rama became the Rav of Krakow, there was a custom in that city. The custom was that the Gabbai of the Knesset went in to the man that his wife went to mikveh the night before, and he told him, Mazato. Imagine that somebody does it today. The Gabbai went to the man and he said, Mazato. But the man came into the city and said, what kind of a custom is that? It's so not proper. How do you do something like that? The Rama says, I am the Rav, becoming a Rav of Krakow. This custom has to stop right away. Fine. The minhag was stopped. There was a guy, a guest, came into the city from another city and came to the synagogue next morning. And he was davening, he was waiting for the Gabbai to come tell him Mazato. He knew that minhag of Krakow is that the Gabbai comes with his wife went to be the night before the custom Mazato. Waiting and waiting, nobody comes. He goes after the Gabbai, starts screaming at him, said, why didn't you come tell me? And in all the days, everybody screamed. They came, they start screaming, why didn't you tell me anything? He says, I'm sorry, the Rav, Rama became a Rav in the city, he made a custom that nobody should do the same. He goes to the Rama, he says, I don't understand, why did you stop this custom, why nobody told me another go? The guy said, my wife is the one that's in charge of the mikveh. Your wife never went to mikveh last night. No, my wife didn't tell me about anybody who went to mikveh last night. Rama, they say, tore his clothing. Imam was sat Shiva. He said, now I understand why the minhag was established. Because they were women. They didn't go to mikveh because the water was so cold. This way, they went home, they said, we went to mikveh. They, because next day, the Gabbai would get up, say, Mazato would be known that if the lady went to the mikveh or not. Wouldn't trick her husband anymore. And then the Rama says, now I understand why the minhag was established like that. Even the minhag doesn't make sense. Didn't make sense. There was a reason behind it. from then on, Rama writes, Achi Noagin, then Lazuz Min HaMigdash. And says, you follow the custom, don't change your custom. And you know, there are Sefarim, there are Sheilot HaShuot, there are so many books that Sefarim is written only to make the Minhagim Chazak, to make Minhagim strong. And there was no Sefer, I am not aware of any Sefer, that was written to make the Minhagim disappear. I never seen a Sefer like that. I haven't seen a Sefer from a proper person like that. I'm sure somebody wrote something about something, but I haven't seen from anybody, any of the Gedorim, to come and say, no, this Minhag doesn't make sense, that Minhag doesn't make sense, let's destroy this Minhag, and let's destroy that Minhag. There's not a Sefer like that. We have to be, this is the Yesod, the foundation of Judaism. The foundation of Judaism is Minhag of our forefathers, no matter where we come from. We have to follow that. Rashba writes that the person should follow even the Minhag of Nashim Zekenot. Even the women, the old women, if they come tell you the custom is like that, you should listen to them. So even them, if they say that, it must be a reason behind it that this custom was established. And both Sephardim and Ashkenazim, they are both are Chazakim, both Elu Elu Divre Elokim Chaim. Both of them are right, and both of them establish their halachot for the right reason, and both of them equally, not more, not less, both of them equally, after each one, Sephardim have to respect the Ashkenazim, the Ashkenazim have to respect the Sephardim, because we have Maran, we have Jeremiah, both of them were Gedolei Ador, Rabbeinu Gershom, Rabbeinu Yehuda HaChassid, they both were Gedolei Ador. We are not talking about guys in the street here. We're talking about not much people that they had, they thought, they had night and days they thought about establishing a minhag. They didn't just get up one morning and say, okay, let's establish a minhag because they feel like it. It didn't work that way. There was a lot of thought and cheshbon and shikul hadat went in to establish a custom, and therefore each one, both of them equally, we have to respect and we have to follow according to who we are and where we are, and minhag hamakom, the where you live, also you have a person has to respect the minhag hamakom also. If a Sephardi goes over by Ashkenazi, you have to respect the minhag that you got. Ashkenazi that comes out in Sephardi, they have to respect the place that they got. Both of them are important. We can't, it's not chas v'shalom that one of them is more important than one of the other one is less important. That's not true. Both are equally and respectfully are important. And in Yisrael Hashem, it's going to come a time that all the halakhot, the Jews, will all get together. But until that time, we have to respect and follow our own customs wherever we come from. But I want to also say that Sephardim also are divided in a lot of different groups. Could be Moroccans, could be Syrians, could be Iranians, could be Iraqi. You have to also follow your custom. Ashkenazim also the same way. There are Jews that they are Yakis, the Jews are from Poland, there are Jews from France. There are different customs. They also have to follow their customs. They can't destroy the custom, cannot cancel the custom. Yisashem should love it, that Hashem should bring all of us together and bring a Mashiach that all of us could become one, like the Beit HaMikdash, like the time that we have the Beit HaMikdash. Yes.
You know, in Israel, for example, Rav Ovadia Yosef wants to unify all the Sephardim under one minhag. But each one of us comes from different backgrounds, for example. I'm going to take two examples. If he does that, that means that each one of us is going to destroy their own minhag. Two things. When Moroccan, for example, when they go to the Torah, when they visit a network in North Africa, Rav Ovadia Yosef considers that you have sex, and therefore you shouldn't do that. Therefore, that means if I do not Rav Ovadia Yosef, I cancel my minhag. Number two, when Kohanim go to the Tufan, while they're doing the brachot, you know, we have been accustomed, you know, to have the nusach for each. So we have the nusach, some of the apparently Rav Ovadia Yosef said, no, you shouldn't do that. So how do you reconcile the fact that Rav Ovadia Yosef wants to unify this type of one Sfaradi type minhag with all the minhagim that we are discussing?
A very good question.
That's why I asked it.
Very good question. Rav Ovadia Yosef, you have to understand his position. And also you have to understand, Rav Ovadia Yosef is a gadol ador. If he's coming with this idea, not a cheshbon. And Rav Ovadia Yosef understands and knows the chashivut and importance of minhagim. He understands that they have to, the minhagim are very, very important, and they have to be kept. Taking all that into consideration, if he came and said that, Max had a very good view. There are other Gedolim that they are not like this, they don't agree with it. Like Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul. He said that you have to follow your customs. Rav Chaim Sofer wrote a sefer that I have it here. This sefer was written against Rav Ovadia Yosef, that all the minhagim that Rav Ovadia Yosef said is not true. This everybody has to follow their own customs. That brings Rayot, brings Rav Ovadia Yosef also write the sefer, then Kol Torah against the sefer. That is not true, that they have that what he says is right. But there is one thing that you have to understand. The both examples that he brought, Rav Ovadia Yosef writes there in the story of the Shua, he said that only if there is not going to be an achloket it should change it. He doesn't say it's absurd to do it, he does not say that. He said it's better not to do it. He doesn't say that you should asur, cancel it and go on, have a machloket. Never says that. He said, Lefi halacha, this is the halacha. But he also says, Anach lohem beYisrael, im en hamnevi'im, v'nen nevi'im. That is, this is they doing it, not to be a reason behind it. He's very careful to say, and the Gade, by Moroccan, they stand up by a set of the Liberot in the Senegal. Rav Ovadia Yosef shouldn't do that. He also writes the same thing. He said, if it's not going to be a machloket, don't do it. But at the same time, I can't tell you why Rav Ovadia Yosef did it. All I can tell you, if he said it, must be a very good reason behind it. Yes.
Could it be that Jews are no longer, for the most part, living in Iraq or Morocco and different countries, and maybe Rav Ovadia Yosef is saying it is better for there to be one Sephardi minhag than to have all these minhagim that are going to get lost possibly anyway, because generation after generation they're going to lose what the Iraqi minhagim was. And so many generations.
That is what's better. That is the reason. Right? This is the reason he said. But there are a lot of Gedolim who are against that. He said, you're right. You want to unify Bnei Yisrael, you want to unify all the Sephardim together, but we come from different backgrounds. You have to keep on keep all the, because once you do that, then all the minhagim, all the customs are going to be forgotten. This is exactly the reason that not everybody has this reason. The Machlok, yes.
I thought that the main reason was because he considers
Eretz Yisrael
to be...
Marat Atra, Baran is a Marat Atra.
He really, he's subjugated to the
Halachot Shacharot. I understand, but that doesn't give you a reason to destroy Minhag. You come into a country that you had a Minhag already.
Right? Yeah, but don't you forget Minhag of Makom. If you, I moved to Egypt today, and everybody in Egypt, acts a certain way, I also have to act that way.
Okay.
We had a new stuff for every
but a lot of Gedolim are against that. They say that you're right. Maran, first of all, they kind of like this. They kind of, that Maran wasn't Maran, but there was people before Maran. Right? They are Rishon LeZion before Maran. There are a lot of other Gedolim before Maran, before Rabbi Yosef Karo came to Eretz Israel. Rav Ovadia says Maran was Maran, that is, I'm sure is right. But there are others say it's not the case. Therefore, if you don't take that as a taken thing, then you have a problem. Yeah.
This is a very prime example. This shul. If we had to follow every minhag We had a nusach for every, for Moroccans and Syrians and Turkish. Everybody has different nusach and everybody has different minhag. We wouldn't be able to, if we quit.
And that's the only thing kept us until today.
But now we're able to have at least a Sephardi minhag, but that they have something
but
to
we are not living in one country.
I understand.
We have to live in the galut.
That's the point. We're not living in Morocco and Syria and Turkey.
And we are.
We
are. They are true, but still living in the same place. Not true. We are Jews still living in Morocco. They are Jews living in Iran. They are Jews. We are not. Mashiach is not here yet.
I understand.
Unfortunately. But therefore, we get a deal with the customs. By the way, I have to tell you, Arab Kaduri was niftar today. And they are going to say Ashkava for the Ilunishimato. Yes.
Maybe one of the reasons that we don't come together is the people who pray, the father still comes to the same family, the husband and the wife are different, and imagine the party. And that's what we already are.
You have to follow, you have to follow the husband cause.
Yes, they don't have to. So
in that case, they have to follow the husband cause. Yes. Yes.
Do you know that the Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom ends this year? It was written for 1,000 years in the year 1006. And this year all the Cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom ends.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. Bad. Bad. Bad day. But the Chachamim, the Raman, the Gedolim, they said that until you are in the Galut, they still have to keep the Rabbeinu Gershom. They extended the Cherem. Can we ask the question later? The picture is David Cole. Again, from 11, I show me how to serve Rabot, the Kosek Israel. There is a people on the ground, so she never had to run for this man to swear a deal to run here and see him. A dish.
Amen.